what happens when an Oxford-educated scholar, critic, and psychoanalyst ventures into a maximum security men's prison to start a book club. In The Maximum Security Book Club, Reading Literature in a Men's Prison, Makeda Brotman, tired of teaching literature to undergraduates who've already memorized all the correct answers, embarks on a quest to educate a different kind of student. She soon finds herself inside the walls of Jessup Correctional Institute in Baltimore, Maryland, assigning a group of 9 convicts 10 challenging classics, from Conrad's Heart of Darkness, Shakespeare's Macbeth, and Stevenson's Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, to pose the Black Cat and Lolita. Brotman selects books that don't flinch from evoking the isolation of the human struggle, the pain of conflict, and the price that must be paid in consequence. The name of the new book is The Maximum Security Book Club, Reading Literature in a Men's Prison, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Makeda Brotman to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
So what brought you to this particular project?
I've always been interested in prisons, and I've known a number of people who worked there and said that it was very satisfying and useful for them. And so this is my first sabbatical, and so I wanted to continue to teach, but I'd been teaching literature at an art college, and the art students there are not always especially interested in literature. So I emailed various prison librarians around Baltimore, where I live, and the prison librarian who got back in touch with me and said that there would be a place for a book club in her prison happened to be the librarian of a maximum security prison for men. So during my sabbatical year in 2012, I started the book club at Jessup Correctional Institution, which is about 20 minutes away from Baltimore.
You ultimately worked with 9 convicts, and give us a sense of knowing what books that you wanted to read with them and to discuss, and how those ultimately were chosen.
Well, I wasn't really thinking about the men necessarily, because I wasn't really going about this in an altruistic way. Because it was my sabbatical, what I really wanted to do was to talk about my favorite books and to talk about them with people who probably hadn't read them before. And I have a rather dark taste in literature, so my favorite books were the ones that I discovered when I was at college, and I didn't necessarily appreciate them very much at the time, but I've come back to them again and again, and each time I've read them, I've found something new in them. And so I thought that perhaps since these men were going to be mostly older than me and have more life experience, that they might have a more appreciative sense of the books than I did when I came across them. So we started with Conrad's Heart of Darkness, and then we went on to Melville's Bartleby the Scrivener. And these are very difficult books, and the men did find them extremely taxing. And so after that, we actually changed and read some books that I thought that they would find more accessible. We read Bukowski's Ham on Rye and William Burroughs' Junkie next, because I wanted to give them something that was more contemporary. And so every so often I would swerve in a different direction and give them something more up to date. So I changed the reading list according to how the men were getting along with the book.
It is interesting, though, because many of the books, as you say, were very dark, and certainly keyed into being isolated and being at a very bottom, being at the very bottom of a place in the world. So did you understand, did they bring things to that literature in discussing it that you hadn't realized in your many readings of these
Definitely.
Classics?
Definitely. I mean, I thought that, you know, they would be in a position to let me just go back for a second. I mean, people who knew I was starting this book club gave me advice and said that maybe these men in prison might want to read something more uplifting, or fantasies, or like the autobiography of Malcolm X, or, you know, books that were more appropriate for their class, generation, experience. But I wasn't familiar with those books, and I wanted to try something rather different, and to see how they would get on with these books that were more difficult. And I felt like I didn't really want to pander and direct, you know, my reading list on something that I thought was going to be appropriate for them. So they did find the books difficult, but they also brought to it, like, sometimes they really managed to identify with the protagonist, and at other times they really did not. Like with Bartleby, I'm sure you're familiar with Bartleby the Scrivener.
Yes.
They did not have sympathy for Bartleby. In fact, they dismissed him as a loser, and couldn't understand why the narrator was so fascinated by Bartleby, which I found difficult to understand, because given their own predicament, one might imagine that they would have sympathy for someone in a very similar situation for them. And it took me a long time to realize that actually they didn't really see themselves in characters that you or I might identify as someone who was very similar to them.
There did come a point, and I guess each man was different, but where they would start to open up and draw parallels to the literature and their own lives and families and choices.
That's right, and that's what I finally started to realize, that when the men were talking about the books, they were actually also talking about their lives, and the book club became that kind of place where they could relax their, you know, their defensiveness and their posturing, and they could talk a little bit more unguardedly about their memories and the choices that they made and their guilt and their remorse. Not necessarily directly, but indirectly, they could bypass the usual kind of ego games that are common in prison and talk a little more openly about their affections and their ambitions and their dilemmas and the difficulties in their lives and other kinds of things that are normally taboo in prison, like drug use, homosexuality, race and religion. By discussing these subjects through the screen of the books, we were able to get to some kind of rather profound discussions that we wouldn't able to get in without that kind of alibi.
One of the things that you bring up in the book that I find fascinating, because it really does, it illustrates that we think of losing ourselves in a book and reading a book, and they're assigned these readings, but they go through lockdown and solitary confinement, and they have shifts that they're working in a hospital or a factory. And there are confrontations, and there's a lot going on, very loud machineries and the clanging bars of the doors closing. So there's a lot to disrupt that very pure process of reading literature.
That's right. And one of the things that I rather naively believed at the beginning was that this would be an ideal situation for these men to read some classic literature, because they're in prison for life, they're going to be in their cells all day. What better situation to get involved in reading? And I didn't really realize that men in prison actually have rather less time than the rest of us. They have a very defined schedule. Men who worked in the kitchens, there's a number of breakfast shifts, so they'd have to get up at 4 or 6 in the morning to work in the kitchens. Men who have jobs have to be up at a certain time. And even ordinary things that, you know, you and I can do at any time, like taking a shower or using the telephone, these men would have to get up and stand in line and reserve a place in line for. And then the times when they are free in their cell, their cellmate might be watching television, or someone might be playing a really loud video game, or the lights might be on, even at night, and there's enormous amounts of noise. And so there really isn't any kind of time when you can simply relax and read. Even your so-called free time, you might want to be working on your legal case or catching up on your sleep or on your correspondence. I was surprised when they did this reading rather than being surprised when they hadn't done it, as I was at first.
Also, you write about instances where there's kind of a rotating relationship and feeling that you have with the various inmates, where you'll be on good terms and then that can go sour. It's a very fluid situation, isn't it?
That's right, and it was very different with my with students in a class. I mean, these men are there because they want to be there, and it's the highlight of their week. And to use the old comedy cliche, they are a captive audience. And yes, there's one of them, the oldest man in the group, Charles, always seemed to be like incredibly curmudgeonly and grumpy. And I always thought he was really reluctant, and yet he always took notes and seemed to have done the reading, and always seemed to be able to identify with the characters, and yet never seemed to have anything positive to say. And yet I realized that was just his way. Even though he didn't know any of the names of the other men in the group, people in prison just have this way of distancing themselves and not showing enthusiasm or emotion. There was another young man who joined the group called Day-Day, who'd been in a number of gangs, and he was a little intimidating at first. And I gradually came to realize, although at first he was very inarticulate and he wasn't really able to speak without using profanities, I realized that he was actually identifying much more deeply with many of the characters than the other men were. So it was really a lesson to me, not just about the literature, but about how different people relate to it in different ways.
What kind of solace do you think the literature gave them and the exercises that you put them through?
You know, I'm not sure if solace is the right word, because as I say in the book, I'm a literature professor, and that's what I know how to do. But mm-hmm. I think they would rather have been doing something else. And but I know that they enjoyed the club, and they enjoyed the discussions, and they enjoyed the process of talking about the books and being able to identify with protagonists, and being able to step outside the role that society has given them as a lifer or an inmate or a convict, and being able to identify with, say, Macbeth, who may be a murderer, but he's also royalty, or Marlowe traveling down the Congo in Heart of Darkness. So to be able to identify with these other people and put themselves in that position, I think allowed them to see themselves in different perspectives. And then the idea of the importance of language, I think, allowed them perhaps to open up their minds a little and see what language could do. They were very aware of what it couldn't do, but and apart from that, just the sort of back and forth, the playfulness, the fun we had, the way that they made fun of my naivety. We just developed some very close relationships. And in fact, the book club is continuing even to this day.
Well, the name of the book is The Maximum Security Book Club, Reading Literature in a Men's Prison. It is published by Harper. Makita Brotman, thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much. Again, the title of the book, The Maximum Security Book Club, published by Harper. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.